Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous.
Episode
75. We are doing a special episode. Today is going to be inside the Anna studio with Shireen Lani Yunes. So stay tuned to hear more about her work in film.
Oh my god.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hello, public sphere. Welcome to Inside the Anna Studio. Could you imagine?
I could.
You're experiencing it. So on this special New Year's Eve episode of Ethnically Ambiguous. that was a character choice.
Yeah, that was.
Last week you heard Shireen interview me, hear about my delinquent ways. Mm-hmm. Today, I'm going to interview Shireen in kind of an Inside the Anna studio, aka Inside the Actor studio, sort of like taking a look at the filmmaker kind of way. Because you guys... Shireen is here. Shireen Yunes is my guest.
I don't
know if you guys might be confused who my guest was. Shireen.
I host...
it's not Steven Spielberg.
I'm one of the hosts of the Ethnically Ambiguous podcast.
Yes, thank you so much. Audience?
Woo!
So, this is a live show in front of a live audience at a university that I can't remember where they... USC? Where did they film Inside the Actor's Studio at?
I think it is USC. Okay. I haven't seen it enough to know for sure.
You don't watch Inside the Actor's Studio? I watch it just to try and imitate James Lipton. I don't know why. It's just one of those things. It's at Pace University.
Where the fuck is that?
New York City.
Well, that's a place where upsetting. They all have their own Pace.
They used to do it at the New School.
That does sound familiar, the New School.
In Manhattan. Anyway. What a joy it is to have you in my studio. So I feel like a lot of the times we always kind of brush around Shireen's filmmaking. And I kind of want to take an Inside the Actor studio approach to discussing her as if she's a director like Spielberg or Soderbergh.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. There's only two white men that I know. I only know two white directors. Is that my fault?
Both named Steven.
No, that's the society's fault.
Yeah. Stop naming your kid Steven.
Stop being white men. You know, here I am in front of a live audience at Pace University in New York City.
Go ahead.
I'm James.
Oh, sorry, James. Tim, yeah.
I'm Senor Lipton, Ice Tea. I wanted to talk to the director, the writer, the auteur.
Oh, my God.
The artiste. The actor. I just, you know, this is being filmed live, so if you could not
make sorry.
Noises,
sorry.
Thank you so much. The true artist, Shireen Lani Yunes. Thank you for joining me.
Woo! Thank you so much for having me. Thank you. Let me get on the stage and fix my dress and whatever the fuck I'm wearing.
You're wearing a pantsuit.
A pantsuit, that is.
Three-piece.
Three-piece. Yes.
Because let's be real, you know you would wear menswear for
something
would. Like this.
I would. You know me
or
too well.
Or a jumpsuit. Beautiful jumpsuit,
Thank
by the way.
Thank you so much.
You know you're wearing one.
Yeah.
So, you know, at what age do you think you realized you like to tell stories?
I am going to ask
every question as if I'm James Lipton, so you're just going to have to roll with it and just answer as truthfully as possible as if a bunch of students are trying to learn from you.
It just didn't help that you, like, crossed your legs as you said it and, like, looked at me, like, very properly.
Yeah, what if I just pulled out a black blazer, too?
out of nowhere.
Like, anyway.
Okay, well, I think I've always known I like to tell stories. So my sister is a year and a half older than me, and we grew up very close. Mm-hmm. And I remember we had a boombox that we would, like, record cassettes on, mm-hmm. and we would read aloud stories. She would read the stories out loud, and I would, like, make the beats or, like, the, like, oh, he's riding on a horse, and I'd, like, make the little actions behind it.
So you started out as a Foley artist.
Yes, exactly. And then
that's actually pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
And do you have coconuts?
No. We had, like, other kinds of, like, I don't know. We had, like, makeshift drums, like with like spoons and like.
Oh, you didn't see Monty Python?
No, I still haven't seen it.
They would. Well, honey, we.
I know.
You know what? While we leave tonight, Monty Python at my place. I know they use coconuts to make the sounds of the horses clocking because it sounds the most like cluck 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 cluck.
Oh, that's a really good idea. Yeah. I'll keep that in mind for my next film.
You heard it from me, not Monty Python.
And so we always were very like in our own little world, very creative, and I was always writing, or like even when before I knew how to write, there are just journals that I had just with scribbles because I wanted to write letters, but I didn't know language yet. So there's just notebooks filled with like literal, like it looks demonic, like
a
it's
young
just like
child's poetry.
Yeah, it's just like seriously scribbles page after page. It's a little disturbing, but and then when I got a little bit older, I started to write, and there's like songs that I would write. We would like me and my older sister would record songs on these cassettes. We'd like make up our own songs with our beats and everything, and then we'd record them. And it's really embarrassing looking back on it now because I'm sure they're all awful. But I had a songbook that I would write, and then when I got a little bit older, I discovered a camera and I became obsessed with taking photos and videos, and but it was always something that was like a hobby. It was like I was always the designated camera person on family trips. I was always like there was photos of like my parents, my sisters, and then like where am I? Oh, I'm behind the camera. I was always very artsy and I drew a lot. Me all my sisters and I would always draw and doodle a lot. But it was never something that I thought I could do forever. It was like, it was always like what's my real job going to be?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so how old were you when you wrote your first script? Or started dabbling with writing scripts?
I want to say like high school. Like it wasn't like, but I didn't write it seriously. Like I didn't think like, I'm going to make this. It was just like. Because at the time, I was still like, I have to go get a real job and like, blah, blah, blah. Like, no one's ever going to support me doing this. And they didn't support me. My parents did not support me doing it. So I would write things all the time. And some of my poetry, I would imagine, like, made into real life. Because some of my poetry is very, like, I don't know, almost like short story-like. And I feel like I have a very visual imagination. So, like, I would, like, imagine music videos when I would listen to songs. Or, like, I would just always be imagining, like, visuals with words. And I think that's why recently I've been really trying to get into more music videos and stuff to explore that like part of myself that like is so I don't know, in my head. I wrote a lot when I was in high school and in college, but I didn't make my first film. Like I would like help other people with their stuff, and I helped a lot of people with their films, and I would make little films for myself. Like I remember when I was 17, there was a really bad fire in San Diego, and I took a lot of pictures of all the damage that happened in my neighborhood, because, like, right across the street from me, like, houses had burned down, and, like, wow. I took a lot of video. It was almost like my mini documentary for myself, and those photos ended up, like, getting an award in school, and I was like, blah, but in my head.
That's great.
It was great, but I also felt like I was exploiting it, like, exploiting the tragedy to, like, get attention. And then I did then not learning my lesson that same year, I went to Tijuana with my camera. It was, like, a film camera, and I took photos of these, like, girls at the border that were, like, asking for money, and then I went around Tijuana with, like, my dad's, one of the girls that worked at my dad's store. She was able to take me across the border, and we like took photos, and like I realized like I really loved this element of photography that was like in filmmaking that was almost like, I don't know, like I couldn't have told someone that in my words. It was like, because I'm not very good with, I don't know why I have podcasts, I'm not very good with words, and so showing someone like a film or a photo of like an experience I had was, in my opinion, like more beneficial for me. So like, and those photos got a lot of attention too in my school, like the ones of Tijuana and stuff, and I was really proud of them. And I was also just like, they're all film photography, so I was like really into seeing them develop in the dark room, and like I thought photography was what I wanted to do forever. And it is something I'm still really passionate about. I think it's a little, I've like lost my passion for it only because like I feel like Instagram and like has made photography like almost a joke. Like, I don't know, like it's the value of like developing a film photograph now is almost like diminished. And I'm trying to reignite that love I had for it. But I did buy a film camera recently, like a 16 millimeter film camera.
Oh, nice.
So I want to use that in my next film, I think. Sorry, I didn't know how I answered that question. I don't know if you did.
Now, you say you're not good with words. How do you think you've struggled? Like, has that been a struggle for you to write scripts because of that? Mm-hmm. Because you also write poetry. So I'm curious, with when you say that, how has that manifested in your work?
I stand by that. I'm much better at writing poetry than I am writing scripts. I'm still having trouble writing scripts now. Writing something knowing that I have to make it, not have to, but writing something with the intention of making it into film, mm-hmm. is much harder for me than writing poetry and just getting my emotions out for whatever reason. Like, I think there is like a producer side of my brain, now that I've made films and like worked in the film industry long enough, that like I can't write without thinking like, where will I shoot this? How much will this cost? Mm-hmm. What location can I use for free? And like, I need to get out of that, and like, I want to be uninhibited again in order to make something worthwhile. Because I think, I don't know, I'm envious of the people that have an unlimited amount of money at their disposal, that they can like make whatever they want, and they're probably not inhibited by what they write, and like they can write whatever they want and truly maybe make it a reality. But for whatever reason, when I write scripts now, I feel this immense pressure in myself. Maybe it's because like I'm trying to make a living off of it. And like, I still write songs, I still write poetry, but maybe because I am not pursuing those as a career, I am less pressured by it.
Right.
And I feel like I get into my head when it comes to writing a film. And I get way too self-critical. I'm so self-conscious about what I write sometimes. And like, I will I've abandoned so many scripts, so many scripts that I never have looked at like for years, because I just like lose my passion for it, or like, I don't think it's good enough.
Interesting.
And I think that's why I haven't made a lot of stuff. I think that's why, looking at my work throughout the years, I've made some films, but really they're like a handful. And I think it's because I get so fearful and like I stop myself from making stuff, and it's harder for me to make a consistent amount of work because I hold myself back. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm curious though, when you struggle with words within your poetry, does that force you to have to look even deeper to find the words?
With my poetry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I feel like words are so important when it comes to poetry.
Yeah, they are.
That's why I don't believe you when you say you're bad with words, because I've seen your poetry. Oh. This is a takedown.
Welcome to the Inn Studio, where we take down our opponents.
No, but I'm curious, because you say that, but then I see your work, and I'm like,
I don't see it
as much as you see it.
I think I'm just my worst critic, or whatever they say. Like, I love poetry, I love writing, but I think this pressure I put on myself to make a good film, mm-hmm. has made me so afraid of messing up or something. And I know, like, I've accepted, like, I'm trying to put into my head, like, my next one, like, the film I make now, the next one will be better. Like, I try to remember, like, this one might suck, but your next one will be better. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to poetry,
you learn from everyone.
Yeah, exactly. The way you said that was hilarious.
I'm really leaning in.
Yeah, you are. But with poetry, I think I'm just more honest. Because with mm-hmm. poetry, I'm so honest about my mental state. I'm so honest about my emotions. It's usually about me being sad or suicidal or something very dark. And I get all those dark stuff out with poetry or with art. And it's like my therapy. Mm-hmm. But with film, I almost feel like I like compare myself with all these other filmmakers that I'm like, I need to measure up somehow. And I not that I alter myself, but it's like, what part of me is worth sharing? And like, with poetry, I'm just uninhibited. Like, I've done it I've literally written poems since I can remember. Like, I remember being in middle school and just like being upset and writing all the time. And when I ended up having a website when I was younger. It was like a Zanga or like an Angel Fire, and like me and my sister had like a GeoCities page, and I ended up having my own website, a blog, where I would write write some stuff about my day, but also like have a lot of intimate poetry on there. And it was just me, my sister that knew about it, and my best friend Salamea, who I think I mentioned before. She was the one I visited in Russia, but she was the only one that read my poetry, and like I loved her poetry and her writing, and like it was just like, this thing between us. And like later on, something happened. My sister was not very nice to me, and she shared that website with like my bullies because like
what?
Yeah. She was not very nice to me.
That is horrifying.
Later in high school.
She's the mean girl.
In high school, she was. And she's admitted to that. Oh. But she's learned. I like to think that she learned a lot. But
for a while. You should write that into a movie.
But for a while, it was really hard because, like, I was bullied a lot. And then I would write, like, these, like, I don't know, these poems about an obvious person. And then I would get bullied for writing about that person. Because she sent it to that person. It was just like a big whole story where my sister and I had a lot of tension then, and we had a really bad relationship for a long time, and it was because she had shared this stuff that was so intimate for me. And yeah, it was online, but it wasn't for those eyes in particular. Like,
right. Because it's people who could use it against you.
Exactly. And I was bullied a lot in high school and in middle school. I was just bullied a lot in school. And my sister, at a certain point, sided with them.
That's dark.
Yeah. And so it explains my first film, actually.
Really?
This tension with my sister. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. The tension I had with my older sister inspired or like was a big point in making my first film, Veneer.
Right. So now that we're at Veneer, let's talk about it.
Okay.
This is a film. I remember when you made it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a darkness to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a girl who seems to be, it's not clear if it's a dream or not, or or I don't know if you were trying to go, for me, I'm going to say how I experienced it. And I rewatched it recently in order to prepare for the Anna Studio. There's almost this romanticism of this. I don't want to spoil it. Do you mind if I spoil it?
I mean,
like,
sure.
It's like a romanticism of this murder,
mm-hmm.
like where someone has been killed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this like kind of dreamlike aspect of like you have this like fantasy,
mm-hmm.
like where you're like, and this is what I'd fucking do to you, you dumb bitch. Like, that's like the vibe I got. And now that you say it's kind of inspired by your sister, it's like, you fucking, the things I've wanted to do because I felt the pain of what you've done to me. That's just how I interpreted it. Of course, I never, at that, when I was watching it, put it on anyone. Like, I was just like, oh, this was like a very interesting, like,
my sister definitely knew it was about her.
Oh.
Like, she figured it out.
She knew. She,
yeah, because we weren't talking at that time. I didn't talk to her for about 2 years.
Okay, you know what? We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we are going to dive very deep into that thought. All right, BRB. And we are back.
Okay.
So before the break, we were talking about your first short film, Veneer.
Uh-huh.
And how vibes of it were towards your sister.
Well, okay, so I've mentioned this in the past. Thank you for the floor. me and my sister were raised like twins for a lot of my life. It got a little hairy at a certain point because she was obviously the one that was more academic than I was and more supported by my parents. And she was the one, like, I was more rebellious and she would always tell on me. Mm-hmm. And so there was a point of us being opposing at a certain point. And then she also in high school was not very nice to me, and she's admitted to this, so I'm not like saying something that would put her under the bus. Like, she's admitted she wasn't very nice and that she sided with my bullies a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the person she
became
dated,
one of your bullies.
Yeah, the person she dated, him and his brother would bully me constantly, and like,
wow.
Yeah, regardless. And their friends would bully me, and like, and he was 2 years older than me, and so was she in school, and so it was like,
it was unnecessary.
It was just like a big. And then I thought his brother was like my friend, and then I found these like AIM conversations where they both were just like, she's the worst person I've ever met. And I was just like, I felt
the
so
brothers.
Yeah. And the, like, between her, my sister and the younger brother who was my age. And so
betrayal.
I feel like I have so many trust issues because of the bullying I went through, especially with my sister, because I thought she was like my sister.
And she was. Not just like, she was your sister.
But I have a lot of trust issues, and I worked through most of them. I feel like I still have a lot of them now. But regardless of all of that, at that point, me and my sister weren't talking because of a lot of baggage that had happened in the past. And even though it had been years since high school, she had done something that I disagreed with as far as like how she talked to my dad about something. Like she told him like she wasn't a Muslim and like she didn't want anything to do with the family. And like it was like a big, she made it into a, like she just made it into a drama. And I kept trying to reach out to her because she was living in Pittsburgh at the time going to medical school. And I kept trying to reach out to her and she never did the same for me. And I told her like, it was a point of contention where I was like, you don't care about me. And she was like, well, yeah, I don't need to talk to you all the time. And if you want to live your life and not tell me anything, I'm fine with that. It was just like a point where I was like, okay, then if you don't want to talk to me, I'm not going to talk to you. And I just didn't reach out to her. And we didn't end up talking for 2 years.
At all. She didn't come home for...
She would come home, but I would avoid her. My parents knew what I was doing too, because they knew I was just like, I'm done with that relationship. I've tried my hardest. I've tried to repair it, even though I was the victim a lot of the time. Like, why am I the one trying so hard? And so I just stopped trying. And we're a lot better now. We ended up living together and everything. And so we're a lot better now. But at that time, I had felt very betrayed because we were so close when we were younger. And she was genuinely like the person I cared the most about in my whole life. Like, I loved her more than anything. And I looked up to her so much. And it changed in high school because I realized, like, I don't know, I think attention from guys made her a little bit evil, to say the least. I wrote the film Veneer. The first thing I wanted to accomplish with the film was to mess with the audience's sense of time. So right. I think if you haven't seen it, I mean, you should watch it if this might make more sense. But like, when you see it, and then when you see the first scene and the next scene, the second scene after that, you assume the first scene is a flashback.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted that on purpose. I wanted to purposely mess with the onset of his time when really it's all in chronological order. Like, I wanted it to be like playing tricks. And I really love that you describe it as dreamy, because that's like my favorite description of my work, because I am very much like inspired by my dreams and like surrealism. And if the one thing my films can be surrealist, that's like my biggest compliment. I love surrealism. I love dream becoming reality. My film Fall is a lot like that. So it's like, I wanted to mess with the audience perception of time, and I wanted to do that through this like story about these two women that kind of abandon each other and then like destroy each other.
Mm-hmm.
And like the murder was just an easy way to do it, because I wanted a visual gasp, you know. It's not that I wanted to kill my sister, it was more like it was representation of me discarding that relationship,
right?
Because I was done, and I really was at that time. And also Veneer was a reference. The reason why it's called that is because it's Veneer are a reference to these like Greek or Norse gods from like Nordic mythology. And they're representative of like fertility and the harvest and like growth and everything. Mm-hmm. But they're also, it's like a conjunction of the word esvenir, which is like this French word that means to disappear, to vanish.
I see.
And there's this term called the vanishing twin syndrome. And it's this thing that happens when one of the twins in the womb eats the other twin.
Naturally.
Yeah. So I thought that was really fascinating. And so I used like the very like chopped down version of that word, which is veneer, like where it all came from for the film. And like, even though it's only something that I know and like whatever, like I just like that title and like whatever. And it's just like a visage, like a veneer, like a facade of something. So I used that title and I made the film. And at the time, me and the actor that's in it, we were very close, and I ended up sharing more with her than I ever shared with my sister. And so I felt like I had found like a, I don't know, like someone.
Substitute.
Yeah, almost. Like a big sister that I wanted at that time.
Yeah.
Because she was like 5 years older than me, and she was really cool, and I thought she was like just a interesting person in my life. And so I bonded with her a lot. And when my sister eventually saw the film, I think she was kind of, I mean, hurt and maybe scared, but I thought, but like, it's the same thing with my poetry. Like, my poetry is very dark.
She thought you were going to murder her.
No. But like, the same thing with my poetry. Yeah. Like, my poetry is very dark. It's very like gruesome and like sometimes it's very gross. But I would never do the things I would like. It's just like a way for me to express the most awful parts of myself. It's just like my poetry or my art.
It's a fantasy that you would clearly never actually
And I would never do that to my sister. I don't want her to die. That would be my worst fear. I would probably, I remember when I was younger thinking I would kill myself if she ever died. Because I loved her that much. But it was just me being so sad about losing that relationship and not being able to do anything about it. And that's why I made that film. And it wasn't, I mean, obviously, like, it could have been more literal. It could have been about, like, two sisters that had a falling out and, like, whatever. But for me, I had to make it into some poetic version of it.
Right.
You know? Because that's just, like, my thing, I guess.
And I think you accomplished that.
Thanks, man.
It's, I see it, now that I have this background, I see it, it's like a, it's a pull. It's like a, what is it, a...
a fish and hook kind of thing?
Where you mean? Like there's two people pulling on two sides where your sister's in a weird way trying to leave you alone after years of like encouraging bullying, and you're trying to repair a relationship, even though in all sense you should have, you have the right to not speak to her because of
that's what I did. I was like, I don't need the relationship. Like, I was very traumatized by it. And she knows this. And she knows I was really fucked up. And I took that right into my own hands. And I was like, I don't need to talk to you. You don't, you, if you actually miss me, you will miss me by me not talking to you. And you will reach out to me. And she ended up not doing that for a long time.
And it, there's like a weird thing where she thinks you're better off. Well, I'm assuming it feels her pull is not literally a pull, but it's like her being like, nah, whatever, man, you're fine. Don't worry about it. Like, you're cool. You do live your life. Who cares?
And I was like, going through a really hard time and I really needed her and just needed someone. And I was really hurt by that relationship being so, I mean, we're a lot better now. I'm really happy that like we've both recovered from that. And like, we've had a lot of crying sessions about it. And like, even when we were living together, we would like something would happen and it would just like trigger this memory I had of like, sometimes I'll forget that she's changed and I get in trouble about this and I'm trying to be better because she has changed. But sometimes I forget and sometimes I'll see her in a different light and be like, you're still the same fucking bitch you were in high school. And I'll have to remind myself, like, people change. She's different. She's made an effort and I'm allowed, just as I'm allowed to change, she's allowed to change. And I mean, I'm not perfect. I've gone mad for her for dumb fucking shit because I've like associated her with her old self. And that's not fair because people change. But we're a lot better now. She's very supportive and we just have very different ways of communicating. And I think we both learned that the hard way. But that was my first film and I didn't know anything about, like, I mean, like, I knew sometimes, like, because I've helped people on their stuff in the past, but that was the first film that I wrote, directed, and produced on my own. So it meant a lot to me. And,
Oh, that's a lot more information than I ever knew about that film.
I mean, like, it's just, I don't know, it's in my head.
No, that's, because why would you just randomly tell people that? Well, with the thing you don't understand. years of relationship with trauma with my sister. That's very interesting. Everyone go watch it. It's on our website.
Yeah, if you want.
The next film I want to talk about is Fall.
Fall.
Probably your greatest...
I mean, it's gotten the most attention.
Yes, the film that got the most awards. Achievement.
Okay, it didn't get any acknowledgement, awards.
Whatever. The film that won the Oscar. It's called Fall. I'm going to talk about a little about my interpretation. It's a woman who clearly seems to be losing her mind and cannot figure out why. Now, when I see this, I see you. And not because you play the lead character.
I hate you.
But also because it feels like it's like a side of your life that if you didn't know you personally, you would never know that. You're struggling here, feeling like you're going crazy. But it's more of like I'm assuming... based off when you were making this, it was around the time you were deciding to go off medication, I believe?
Yeah.
Yes. I know. I wrote a book about you. and I don't know. I see you writing something that you understand, which is confusion of self. And I thought it came off well as well.
Thanks.
Well as well. And I think it's a story about a girl who doesn't understand why she's seeing things.
Uh-huh.
She goes to the doctor. The doctor's like, no prob, dog. No big. Mm-hmm. What ifs? Not literally.
Also, Raj Desai, yeah, another Raj guest Desai. on our show, previous guest.
Yes. I personally, if I were to say, I think you had early onset dementia or some, you were going to have a stroke soon.
Right.
That's what I took away. I was like, oh, that doctor is not prescribed. Like, she needs a CAT scan, like ASAP. Yeah. She's going to have a stroke. Or she has either early onset Alzheimer/dementia.
Uh-huh.
So I diagnosed you.
Okay, cool.
So just so you know now.
Thank you.
What was wrong with you?
Thank you.
But tell me a little bit more about the, what you were thinking when you made this film.
Well, okay.
I'm making her watch it as well.
I know. This is uncomfortable. I hate watching my stuff. Okay.
It's okay.
So I've struggled with mental illness most of my remembered life. And going on and off medication is not very wise. I've suffered from like a lot of withdrawal symptoms like throughout the years. And like there's one medication called Effexor, the generic version is Venlafaxine, and like it's notorious for having very bad withdrawal, and I was taking the highest dose possible for either a man or a woman. Like it was like, I think it was like 250 milligrams a day or a night. I think I took it at night. And so when I decided to wean myself off of the, or like there were times where I would just like think I was out, and I would like panic, and I wouldn't have any medication. I would call my doctor and she's like, you still have some? I'm like, no, I know, I can't find it anywhere. And then I would be suffering from severe withdrawal for like 2 or 3 days. I was like shaking, like feeling cold, then hot, like hot flashes, really feeling insane, not feeling safe to drive, not feeling safe to do anything. And then finding a pill the next day, like after a week of withdrawal, and mm-hmm. feeling truly insane. Like I really felt like I was losing my mind. And I would have these hallucinations randomly, like sometimes, because I also have insomnia, and when I'm not taking sleeping medication, I can't sleep, literally. And the more I don't sleep, the more I will hallucinate, like, really weird shit. This has happened ever since college.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I've always had very vivid dreams. And I think I touched on this a couple episodes ago, but when I started taking sleep medication regularly, and I started having even more vivid dreams, I started looking forward to going to sleep versus being awake, because I was like very depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made this film because when I would be awake, I would genuinely, I would remember something and not know if it was a dream or a memory. And it really terrified me because I didn't feel like I was in control of my own brain. And so I wanted to make a film that kind of like showed this in-between space between like dream and reality that I felt like I was occupying a lot of the time. Where, like, I didn't know if a memory was real. I didn't know if a conversation I had was deja vu or actually, like, a real thing that had happened. I really felt like I was losing my mind. And I almost, and what happens in the film actually happened to me. I did go get an MRI. I thought I had a brain tumor. Like, I thought there was, like, I couldn't not be insane. Like, I didn't want to believe that there was nothing wrong with me because I felt so completely insane. And ends up, I didn't have a brain tumor, did not have brain cancer or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to make a film that kind of demonstrated this feeling that I had, like this disassociation with my body and my brain that was so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I wasn't supposed to be in the film. I had cast an actress, she was going to be in the film. And then a week prior to being in the film, she had been booked on a pilot.
Ugh.
And so I was like, fuck. And I had all the locations set up. I had all my people, like, booked out for, like, the crew and the DP and everything. And I asked the person I was dating at the time if they thought it was and I trusted them as far as filmmaking goes. And I asked a lot of people what they thought, like, do you think I can do this? Like, do you think I should just do the role?
Mm-hmm.
And they all said, like, well, I think you know this feeling better than anybody because it's based on your experience, so maybe you should. Like,
yeah.
So I did. And I don't regret it. It was a very interesting learning experience. I think because I had worked with the cinematographer in my previous film on Veneer, mm-hmm. I trusted his eye. And so that was like the only reason I was able to do that, because directing yourself is way harder than it sounds. Unless you're Bradley Cooper. But like trusting like that, especially for me, because I'm kind of self-conscious with the way I look, like trusting that like when I asked the cinematographer, like, do I look okay in this frame? Like, he'd be like, yes. I'm like, okay. And so, yeah, I made the film about this in-between space between dream and reality that I feel like I was living in, like, the majority of my life. And I still feel like that a lot of the time. Like, I remember I, like, I don't remember a lot of, I mean, I have a really good memory, and I think that's why I freak myself out, because I'll remember something and genuinely not know if it's a dream or a memory. And I'll be like, and I'll have very intense deja vu. Well, like, I'll be talking to someone and really know what they're going to say next, because I'm like, this has happened before. And then I'll just freak myself out. And I'm also very superstitious, and, like, my mom has very intense dreams and, like, almost these, like, what's the word? These dreams that, like...
Realistic?
They tell, like, what's going to happen.
They're kind of like readings.
Yeah, like, there's this superstition in Arabic, like... not like mythology, but like culture, where if you see a ghost of someone in your dream, that if you see, if someone is dead and they come to you in your dream as a ghost, it's actually them coming to you. And if you see someone in your dream dying, they will actually die.
Oh, jeez.
So my mom had a couple of times when I was growing up. I remember this one time, it was like recent, like the most recent one that happened was a couple years ago. We woke up. And we went to, my mom and my dad drink coffee in bed when they wake up. And I went to their room, and she was like, I had the strangest dream that my friend's husband died. And like a couple minutes later, the phone rang. And he had died.
Wow.
And we all looked at each other, and we all know my mom has this weird thing. Like, I can't explain it. Like, the reason why I believe in supernatural shit is really because of my mom. Like, I cannot explain the shit that's in her head. And I think I low-key have some of that, like, some of this, like, weird things I can't explain. And maybe it's because I know my mom is capable of it. I'm like, well, maybe I am too. But really, there's things in my head that, like, make me feel crazy. And especially in regards to my dreams and my deja vu. So I wanted a film that kind of showed how crazy you feel when you're, I don't know, your mind is getting the best of you. And especially as someone who... has been on and off medication for a long time, I think I wanted a remedy that was, like, easy. Like, see, you're not depressed. You're not anxious. Like, you have a tumor. Like, duh. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that explains all your problems, man. But really, it's not the case. Yeah.
But, wow.
Yeah.
That gives a lot.
Yeah.
Background. I see that now.
Yeah.
Your mind playing tricks on you.
Yeah. I felt like that a lot. Like, I couldn't trust my brain. And my poetry reads like that, too. Like, I just can't trust myself a lot. My brain and what I see. But, yeah, in the end of the film, not to give anything away, you guys should watch it if you guys want. But the end of the film is kind of just, like, accepting that, like, I am this way.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. I think that the hard thing about filmmaking is that I imagine certain things in my head a certain way, and then the film is never the way I imagine it. Like, it's just impossible. Right. It's just impossible to have something exactly the way you imagine it in your head. Right. And I have to, like, reconcile that with myself, because I'm never going to keep making things if I'm so critical about them.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know. And something that really... And I didn't really think about the reasons why I made it before I made it. But when I released it finally online, it was like a year and a half after I had made it, because I hated it so much. I hated that I was in it. I hated everything about it. And I, like, held on to it for the longest time. And then I finally put it out, like, April of this year, even though I made it in 2016.
Right. I remember reading the script originally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it took you a long time.
See, it takes me a long time to do anything.
Release it.
Yeah, it takes me a long time.
I also think you were waiting to submit it to festivals for a
while. I was, but I didn't get in anywhere, and I sat on it for like another 8 months. But the same thing with Veneer. I didn't release it until like a year after I made it. Like, I'm so slow with some things, because I think I'm just in a constant state of fear, and I hate that about myself, because if I were to die tomorrow and I want someone to remember me by something, I'd want them to think I was fearless. Mm-hmm. And I know that's not the case, because I'm so afraid of everything. But I really love the idea of someone thinking I'm fearless. And I am very spontaneous. And I think I have my moments where, like, I'm like, I don't give a shit, whatever. But when it comes to my work, I am very self-conscious. And I don't like that. And I want to get over it somehow. But yeah, so I finally released it in April of this year, and I'm really glad I did. And I'm getting better at making things and releasing them immediately, but not immediately, but like not sitting on them for so long. So when I released it, I think I've talked about this before, but this girl that listens to the podcast, Mia, she reached out to me on Twitter with like this, these multiple tweets and like these frames from my film from fall. Mm-hmm. And she said that she related to them so much because she had never seen like dissociative disorder described in that way. And I didn't know a lot about dissociative disorder at the time. Like, I knew a little bit about it because, like, I thought I had it at a certain point. But she, like, screen grabbed certain moments of the film and wrote these tweets that were, like, I never thought I could see something that could, like, describe what I was going through. Right. And I honestly, like, if no one else had seen the film but this girl, it would have been worth it for me. Because she was so, I don't know, appreciative of what I had done that it made it worth it. And I was like, oh, it is important that I make these things. Even if it touches just like one person, it's worth it. And so she, I don't know if she knows how much that meant to me, but it was like something I'll never forget, like that I was able to reach someone that way and that they felt represented as far as like their mental illness.
Right.
Because I didn't really make it being like, this is what depression is. This is what this is. Like, this is how crazy I feel. So, I don't know.
No, I feel like it was more of a candid, more, like, you have to really think what's going on here. It's not just presented out like, this girl's depressed. This girl has this. This girl has that. It's like, no, you really have to watch it all the way through and think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I recommend everyone does that.
Thanks. Yeah. This is weird. I haven't talked about my films at this length ever.
Of course not. We're going to take a quick commercial break.
Okay.
And we're back.
Hi.
At Anna's actor studio, inside the Anna studio. You know, we will wrap it up eventually. But before then, I want to talk about another film you wrote called Getting Old.
This voice is something else. Okay, keep going.
I'm not doing a voice. How dare you? I watched 18 hours of Inside the Actor Studios to do this, and you were making fun of my voice. Okay. I'm a method actor.
Christian Bale.
I'm literally leaving here. I'm going to continue to be James Lipton for 2 weeks. So you made a film called Getting Old.
Yeah.
Which you wrote, directed, produced, partied. Mm-hmm. That last one meant nothing. And it's a funny film.
Uh-huh.
It's about a girl who dresses up as an old lady and tries to harass an ex or something, an ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
It's not as long as your other ones. It's actually quite short. It's a vignette, if you will. A vignette.
That's how you say that, right?
And I think it's a departure from your normal, more serious look at your psyche.
It's still a look at my psyche in a way. But that was me Getting Old was me attempting to make something very quick, release it very quick, and get used to making things faster.
Interesting.
Because I didn't like the idea, because I didn't submit it to any festivals, I didn't do anything, I just wanted to make something and finish it. And I'm glad I did that. It's kind of an element of my psyche, and it was a film I actually wrote like 3 years ago.
Oh.
And I just never made it. And it's very, like, Miss Doubtfire inspired.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's got Doubtfire vibes.
But when I made it, I kind of changed a little bit about it because it is still an element of my psyche because I've talked about this before. I don't know if this will come out. I know this is going to come out before. But I'm very much, like, a giver when it comes to, like, myself and like my relationships and my any like I'm just like I'm better at giving than receiving. And so this older woman, this Doubtfire character, was supposed to be like a representative of like me just trying to give everything that I could possibly give to this relationship and just make a fool out of myself and just like I know it's personal for me because I know myself, but when you look at it, it's just supposed to be funny. And I love comedy. I think I really wish a lot of my films are funnier than they are. I think there are some funny moments in Fall, which I think is only to me, but I made it as like a very dark comedy. I ended up more of a drama because that's just like the way my brain works. But in the perfect world, Fall would have been a dark comedy. But getting old was me trying to experiment with comedy and, like, because I really do love comedy. And, like, I knew when I was younger, the thing I wanted to do the most was, like, make people laugh. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking that in my head. But so I made it as a way for me to, I don't know, collaborate with these two actors that I really wanted to work with and also make something funny and, like, still deal with, like, weirdness, because I think a lot of my film, I think all my films are weird, and I like that about my films. I think they're mm-hmm. just weird and wacky, and I like that. So yeah, and it was also like we made it in like 3 hours. We filmed it in 3 hours, and we edited it like that week, and we released it the week after. And it was just something very. It felt good making something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
to just have a very quick turnaround.
Yeah, and it was the shortest thing I had made by that time, like mm-hmm. by a long shot. So that felt interesting because and even then it was like the a third of it is just the end credits. Like mm-hmm. it's just her walking away. And I purposely mm-hmm. wanted to keep that shot, even though everyone else was like, cut it down. And I was like, I want her to walk the entirety of the sidewalk. Like, this is my vision.
I thought that was funny.
Thank you.
Because I was like, oh, this is never going
to
end.
Exactly. I think that, like, those subtleties to me are the funniest parts.
Yeah.
And I think my humor is just harder. It's like not as obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine with me. I think my subtle humor is like something I like. But that's something I was really like with my editor was like, with that film, I edit a lot of my own stuff, but with that one, I was working with the editor for my other films, and he was like, just make it shorter. It's not that funny. And I'm like, it is. And after mm-hmm. he was done, he was like, I get it. And I was like, thank you. Yeah. So my humor is just this bizarre, dry humor, and it's fine.
It works.
Yeah. So
and you see it.
That's a film about me being a giver.
And what are you working on now? Like, I know you said you had another film you're working on mm-hmm. that you can't shoot till later. Can you give any details? Are you allowed
to? I hate you so much.
I'm sorry. I'm just an editor.
I'm just being myself. No, there's a film I feel like I make excuses to put off films, and I'm just like, I can't make this till later. But really, I'm just terrified of making them. There's a very short film that's like a couple minutes, literally, that I'm going to make in the spring because the person I want to be featured in it is not available until then. So that's going to happen. I'm still working on finishing writing like a bigger feature that I want to make. And I think I'm capable of making a feature because Fall I filmed in 3 days and it's about 20 minutes. So I think I can hustle and make a feature happen. I just want it to be a good one. And yeah, I think I'm interested in getting represented eventually, and like every person that does that needs to have written or dealt with a feature before. And I've worked on a couple of features, but not as a writer or director. I've only produced.
Right.
So I know finishing and writing a feature is like the next thing I have to do to be taken seriously, but I just have to do it. And writing is very hard for me right now. I don't know why. I just can't do it. And yeah. And I've also just started writing features in the past and just abandoned them completely. And that's something I want to stop doing.
They're a beast.
Yeah, it's hard. It's very hard. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's also this idea, like, why would people be interested in the things in my brain? Like, why do people care about...
Because you're an Fall? Artist.
You know what I mean? But I don't know. But like, there are directors that adapt books that have been very successful. Like, a lot of Stanley Kubrick stuff has been adapted from novels. Like, a lot of, like, big-name directors don't necessarily write their own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of me is thinking, like, well, maybe I don't have to write something. Maybe I could just direct something. But I also like having a personal attachment to it because I'm more passionate about mm-hmm. it. So I'm just trying to find, like, a level playing field, I guess. And I love, like, meeting people that want to work together and, like, I think a lot of my closest friendships are people that I've worked with, and but I also think, like, writing for me is something that's very solitary, and I think that scares me too, because that means, like, I have to be alone for a long time, and, like, even though I love being about myself, I'm very, like, destructive of myself, mm-hmm. and I, like, won't leave the house, or I'll, like, start, like, picking at my skin, or, like, dealing with my anxiety in unhealthy ways, whether it's through eating or not eating or whatever, and so I think that I have to deal with a healthier version of writing, which is like maybe going out to somewhere else and writing or something. And, or honestly, I think I wish I had like a a retreat to go to. Like a...
You should.
A yoga retreat or something.
You should go to a writer's retreat.
Yeah.
Go stay in a cabin for weeks and write something. Live in a lighthouse. I can't
take anything you say seriously.
Live in a lighthouse. Write something in a lighthouse.
Yeah. I think I need to just get out of here. And
it's hard when you have so much stuff going on. You need your mind to clear.
Yeah. I want to be in a forest. I know that for a fact. I want to be in a forest. I want to be surrounded by trees.
The Berkshires.
The what?
The Berkshires, I just found very pleasant.
I have a lot of things going on, and I'm still writing poetry. I'm working on my next poetry collection. I'm like 50 pages deep into that, so that feels kind of cool. But I'm not going to release it till I have a lot more. So, and there's also like this one art piece that I've been trying to make for years, and I've been collecting materials for this art piece for the longest time. I'm collecting empty pill bottles for the longest time because my art piece requires empty pill bottles. And I have a lot of them. I've literally had this idea for years. So I have like at least like 200 pill bottles, like maybe more. And so my goal for myself in the next year, I hope in January I can make this a reality, is to make this art piece because it's been on my mind for so long. and I want to make it, and then just start holding myself accountable and just like letting go of fear and this insane caliber I hold for myself that's like unattainable, and just like making things and being okay with maybe them sucking, and like I don't know. And there's also a song I want to make. I already wrote it. I just have to make like the music for it. But for whatever reason, it's easier for me to do that than to make films. And I think it's like telling of like the pressure I put on myself.
Right.
But I want to become the person that I've always wanted to be. And that's like someone that's fearless. And I'm not that person yet. And that makes me sad.
You'd be surprised. I think you have a lot of fearless aspects about you, like how you go about making your films. You just get it done.
I guess. I've only made a couple.
Yeah, but it's hard to make films. Like you said, it takes a while.
Yeah.
It's a process.
I think that's why I really love music videos, because I edit my own music videos and they're very fun to edit. And I'm not the best editor, but I still think they're very fun. So I think in the next year, I want to definitely make more music videos. I want to make, like, these shorter projects are more fun for me. And, I took this video for my sister's engagement party, and I think I want to edit together, like, a very short documentary-esque for, like of my family. And, like, I need to, like, make it short because I don't think my family wants me to put everything in there.
Right.
So, I'm going to do that and, just keep experimenting and, like, trying to find myself in this industry. And I think I'm pretty... I don't know. It's overwhelming because there are so many people here that want the same things that I do.
Right.
And, I don't know. Because first and foremost, like, I'm a filmmaker, and I think I forget that a lot. And that's what I want to do. That's what I want to be. Mm-hmm. And that's what I am. But I almost am, like, not worthy of it, I feel like. And so I need to get over that. I'm just in my head a lot, and I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. And the film I'm planning to make in a couple of months with this actor I have in mind, it's like the first film that deals with me being raised Muslim, like, or anything about that, because I think for a long time I like purposely avoided my culture and like the religion I was raised with and everything, because I didn't want to be like that person. Uh-huh. Like, oh, she always talks about being brown, blah blah blah. But I think it's necessary to but that's also part of myself, you know.
Strong brand.
Yeah, strong brand. Well, here, I feel like having this podcast has let me, like, let go of a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Like, be okay with talking about it and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Wow, well, tell the audience where they can find you.
I hate you. No, this has been a fun time in the Actor Studio. Thanks so much for having me on your stage.
It's the Anna Studio.
The Anna Studio. The Anna Studio. Yeah, if you guys want to watch the films that we talked about, they're on my website or on my Vimeo. My website's Shireen Lani, L-A-N-I, S-H, well, my first name is S-H-E-R-E-E-N. If you don't know how to spell it by now, fuck yourself. I'm just kidding. I love you guys. You can follow me on Instagram at Shirohero, S-H-E-E-R-O-H-E-R-O, and on Twitter is the same thing, but 666. And I don't know, I appreciate the support. You can, I mean, honestly, the people that have bought my poetry book mean the world to me. And it's on Amazon. It's also my website if you guys want to check it out. It's called Dime Peace, like D-I-M-E, Peace. And buy it in the meantime while I finish my next one. And write me a review. If you guys have bought the book and like it or think it's cool or just want to support me, go on Amazon and write a review for it. It really helps me a lot. There's like the ones that are up there right now mean the fucking world to me. And it's really, really nice of you guys. So thank you. But if you haven't written a review, do it, please, because it would make my day.
Yes, please do.
Yeah. But yeah, just listen. I think I don't know if you guys know this, but I really appreciate every one of you that listens because... I think it reminds me that my voice is worth listening to. Just as a filmmaker, as a creative, it's like, oh, I do have things to say that people want to hear. And so I hope you guys know that, especially going into this new year tomorrow. Yes. This podcast is so old. This is episode 75. And we couldn't do it without you. And I couldn't do it without you 100%. And so... thanks for just giving me confidence in myself. So thanks.
It's true. I mean, I feel like our fans have really given us a reason to continue the show.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, it's just, you know.
We wouldn't do it without you guys. Like, maybe we would, but not this consistently. I don't know.
No, not at all.
Yeah, it feels weird having people wanting to listen to you. And like, even now, like when someone's like, I have your book. I've watched your films. I listen to your podcast. And I'm like... that sounds awful. Why would you do that? Like, I'm like in disbelief that people want to listen to us or like want to support us in any way, or me in particular anyway. But I'm trying to get better at it. And I don't know. I think my life is definitely curated on social media. And like, I try to show the best parts of myself sometimes, except for the parts where I'm like breaking out and I have like freckle versus pimple. And like, I let you guys see how much breakouts I have. But other than that, I don't know. Living in LA is tough, and I don't know. I like LA more when I leave it for a while, and so
I think we all do.
Yeah, and so I don't know. I need to travel more. I know the things I know I need to do more is work out and travel because I know I'll be happier when I get out of here and like see the places I've always wanted to see, which is like Peru and like the Northern Lights and all these like exotic places that I've only like thought about in my head that are so dreamy. And I don't know if you guys have noticed, dreams are a big part of my life. Mm-hmm. but yeah,
well, thank you everyone for listening. You can follow us on Ethnically Amb on Twitter, Ethnically Amb Big on Instagram. I'm at Anna Hosnia. You can find my Anna inside the Anna Studios nowhere because yeah, it doesn't exist. And Shane, did you already do yours?
I did mine already.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, you did it earlier because you just said how to find... when I asked you how to find you, I'm so used to the entry that I... as soon as I said it, I was like...
You forgot that you were interviewing your co-host.
Yeah. Okay. So that's how it's done. Inside the Anna Studio, I'm...
if you guys want more of it, fucking let us know. It was a fucking treat. And I really did. I do hope you guys enjoyed these past 2 weeks of us interviewing each other because it was... less stressful, I think, for the both of us. No research involved. We know our heads.
Yes, so keep it. Bite that ass.
Bite it.